Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am your host, Gary Gramling. I'll be joined by a special guest in just a moment. But this is it. This is the special time of year. We are into mock draft country. I guess that's not a time of year. That would be a place. We were in mock draft time. The mock draft time zone? Let's go with that. And let's bring in Andy Benoit. Hey, Andy. Once again, our special guest this week to run through. We're going to do team needs for everyone, and then I will feebly assign them a prospect that fits. But Andy, what do you think? Is this a time or is this a place or both?
Right now would be a form of both. I don't like it when fan bases add the word nation after their fan base.
Me
so
either.
And country, they used to say country years ago when I was a kid. It would be such and such country like you just did. And then it became, all right, 49er nation or whatever. I hate that. So anything that keeps us far from that whole thing, which would probably involve you doing a whole new intro, would be satisfying to me.
Okay, everybody forget what I just said over the first minute, and we are in mock draft time. Mock draft season.
I'm not crazy about that either. It's the lesser of all the evils.
All right. Good enough. So those of you who have listened to the show over the last couple of years know what goes on here. We will do the first quadrant of the first round today, and it'll be a four-part series. When we get to the end, we will get to all the teams, including those who don't have first-round picks. Andy loves that when I assign guys in the 50s to it's the Rams every year. This year, actually, Buffalo is the last team to scheduled to make a pick. They don't pick till 54. But we'll do the top eight in this show. Andy's going to run through the team needs as the, I guess, coach, and I'll be the general manager or someone with some sort of college scouting background to assign these guys. But Andy, let's get right to it with the Cincinnati Bengals with the first overall pick.
Well, obviously it's Burrow. He's going to be the guy. Do we want to skip the quarterback conversation? One thing I think it's worth mentioning with the quarterback conversation is these coaches right now are worried about whether they're going to even be able to play their rookies, especially at that position, because you heard we've got a virus going around. Gary, I don't know if you heard about that, but it's keeping these teams from practicing, and if you don't practice, it's hard to play rookies.
Yeah, it's going to be a really tricky offseason here, and obviously, as I keep telling my kids every time they ask me when they're going to go back to school, we have no idea. This is completely unprecedented. There are obviously some mathematical models being put out there about when, you know, sort of things might get back to some sort of normalcy, in which case maybe teams can do stuff this summer, but that's certainly no guarantee at this point. We don't even know what the situation with the season's going to be, but for a new quarterback, I would think Burrow as a guy who played in a couple of systems. You know, he played for Joe Brady last year in that breakout senior year. He would probably be best suited among these quarterbacks to sort of come in earlier rather than later. But I think we all kind of thought in like February, okay, it's a foregone conclusion. They're going to take Burrow. They're going to trade Dalton. And if someone offered them something very worthwhile for Andy Dalton, I'm sure they move on. But it might be a nice luxury to have Andy Dalton around come September.
I would be shocked if they – it would be, but I'd be shocked if they do that. Dalton, they can trade at any point. There's the way his contract's set up, they don't have any need to rush with it. And let's remember, it's hard to play a rookie. That's a consideration. The coaches are worried about it. The last time we were in that position, Andy Dalton was the rookie. It was the 2011 season. They had the lockout. Nobody practiced during the offseason until training camp. And Dalton came aboard. A.J. Green was there as the number one or number four pick, number one for the Bengals. And the Bengals went 9-7 that year, and it was the first of 5 years in a row that they made the playoffs. And I was texting with an offensive coordinator the other night, actually. We went through all of the different QB coach pairings or QB offensive coordinator pairings in 2011 to see if there was any impact that the lockout and the missing of the practices, if that had any impact on rookies or young QBs. And it did maybe a little bit, but really not a lot, not nearly as much as you would guess. And there were still teams, the 49ers were one, that had massive leaps forward in that first year with a new coach. I forget who their QB was that year. I think it was Kaepernick. So they had a new QB for a lot of that year, too. Yeah. And Kaepernick replaced Alex Smith midseason.
Yep.
But the point is, I think coaches are worried now about playing rookies. I understand why they are. Last time this happened, it turned out to not – it was a factor, but not a big factor, not nearly the factor people thought it would be.
Yeah. And it was – they actually – the 49ers played Alex Smith that entire season.
Oh, Kaepernick came in 2012. You're right. Yeah. Thank you. Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know that off the top of my head, so don't beat yourself up, Andy.
Well, no, I remember that because there was a QB controversy midseason about what to do with Kaepernick or Smith when Alex Smith was back in the lineup. And from what I've heard, and I thought at the time, that's a no-brainer. You have to go Kaepernick because it's such an advantage to have a weapon like him that no one has seen before midseason. You can't adjust for him very easily, and he wound up – the Niners, I guess, never really had much of a conversation. It was Kaepernick all the way that year.
Let's talk about the Bengals. We'll give them Joe Burrow first overall here, but obviously they pick at 33. They have a chance to address some other needs here. What should they be addressing with their early second round and early third round picks?
Well, their run defense was embarrassing last year, to be quite frank, and they know that, and they've addressed it already by signing DJ Reader. They need some linebackers behind him, though. Jermaine Pratt's really the only guy they have that's any kind of recognizable name, and I thought he had a fairly average rookie season. He didn't get on the field as quickly as I think some rookies would have, given what the Bengals had in their starting lineup a year ago. So linebacker would certainly help them a lot. Offensive line would help them, too. And their line is going to be better than it was a year ago if everyone just stays healthy. But the idea that Xavier Suafilo, Trey Hopkins, probably Michael Jordan, the fourth-round pick a year ago, he's slated ahead of Billy Price. The idea that they're going to take a massive leap forward, you can't bank on that. So if there's an interior offensive lineman, I'd go that direction. But I'd probably go best lineman available overall.
Yeah. Yeah, there should be some interesting guys at the top of the second round here. Michigan's Cesar Ruiz is a favorite of mine who could probably play any of the interior spots. But it's also, you know, you mentioned Billy Price, kind of a reminder that, you know, we all get in the habit, you probably don't, but a lot of us get in the habit of being like, okay, well, they're taking this guy in the first round, just slot him in as a starter for the next 5 years. And, you know, I know our old boss, Peter King, was sort of on the Bills for giving up too much for Stephon Diggs because why not just draft a receiver instead? And it's kind of like, well, these guys are not sure things. No one's really a sure thing year to year, but especially these rookies. A lot of them just won't pan out. Sorry to be so pessimistic at the top of our mock draft show.
Yeah, no, you can't remind people enough because we forget about that. We get into all these details and traits about these guys. And by the way, most of them, nobody ever talks like that about them again. The example I always use is, I mean, you can pick any guy. Daron Payne a few years ago, I'm sure everybody was breaking him down, and now he's with the Redskins, and he makes a few plays every game, but nobody's talking about his attributes anymore, even though he's a really good player. The point is this draft stuff gets very overanalyzed at times, and part of the overanalysis is people forget that half of these first-rounders are not going to pan out.
Yep. That is very true. Let's Daron Payne is a good transition here. Let's go Washington with the number 2 pick. And should mention at this point, because now we're into, you know, is someone going to trade up type of thing? We're not going to project trades here. If trades do happen over the course of the series, we will reflect them and adjust our board accordingly. But for now, Washington staying with the number 2 pick. Let's start with what they need, Andy, because I think we both will be in agreement as to who they will take.
You think they're taking Chase Young?
I do.
Yeah, and it's interesting because they really don't need a defensive lineman at all. And I do believe wholeheartedly that teams draft for need. They all say they don't, but they absolutely do. And there are certain players that you do just take the best guy on the board when certain guys are that much better than everyone else. And it sounds like this Chase Young guy is that much better than everyone else. So that's the top need they have, or that's the top pick they do. Their biggest need, I'd say, from there, probably cornerback still. I like their secondary more than others do. I don't like that they're minus Quentin Dunbar. I thought he was a really good corner for them a year ago. So they need someone to replace Dunbar, and that guy can be an inside or outside corner. And if they're going to draft him high, it's probably going to be an outside corner. But Fabian Moreau is slated to start there now, and Moreau, I think, is at his best in the slot.
And they just moments ago, as we tape, they just signed Ronald Darby.
That's not that right. That's a, thank you.
Not
thank
that you that's a game changer, but I think Ronald Darby falls in that. I feel like every year there's a group of I want to say like two dozen cornerbacks where it's like they could fall anywhere on a spectrum from pretty good starter to, you know, kind of liability out there. And I feel like Darby is in that class.
I agree. It's the Janoris Jenkins class. Janoris Jenkins is a superstar who can really get picked on at times. And he's much more of a star than picked on. But Darby is an erratic corner in a good way. He's a talented guy. I would imagine they still, they gave him I'm looking it up here, 1 year, $4 million deal. So they would still be in the market for a corner. And I would probably say wide receiver as well. They're not very deep at wide receiver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're interesting. They are, as far as we know, holding steady on that demand for a second round pick for Trent Williams because they traded their second round pick in a trade up last year with the Colts. So right now they pick two, and then they're not scheduled to pick again until 66, and we'll see if they can recoup a pick, or maybe this ends up being a trade down scenario for them for someone wanting to come up to get a certain quarterback. Well, let's move on to a team that won't be taking a quarterback. That is the Detroit Lions. Andy, what do the Lions need?
Well, Matt Patricia wants to do that Patriots-style scheme, and that scheme's interesting, as we've talked about, I'm sure, before, because you don't necessarily need dynamic pass rushers, and dynamic pass rushers are expensive. They either cost a lot to sign or they cost high draft capital. So that's part of the advantage of the scheme is we can spend our resources elsewhere. And typically those teams, Miami, New England, other teams like that, they'll spend it on cornerbacks. Mm-hmm. Detroit just traded away a stud corner, as we've talked about. Having said all of that, Gary, let's say they even find the corner and it's Okuda and he plays opposite Desmond Trufant and Justin Coleman. That's a decent enough cornerbacking unit. The whole idea is you don't need a pass rusher. That can only go so far because there were times last year that Detroit's lack of pass rush really punished that defense. And it wound up, I think, being the last ranked pass defense in the NFL. And so, yeah, you don't need pass rushers, but you can't have guys like you and me out there playing. So obviously you need something. I wonder if they're going to look at that and prioritize that. Now, maybe they feel Jamie Collins can be that for them, though, even though that's not his natural role. You know, Collins gives them some multi-dimensional elements there.
Yeah, Jamie Collins, Jared Davis.
Who became very good as a blitzer last year.
Yeah.
So, which would also add to the case that they maybe don't feel they need a pass rusher. But if we're saying defense, that's what they need on defense.
Yeah, the question would be, it's funny, it's not funny, especially if you are looking for a pass rusher. After Chase Young, it's a really dicey group of edge guys. There are some guys who are interesting, some high upside guys. I don't think there's anyone you'd even consider with a top five pick outside of Young in this draft. So, you know, you're looking at address the interior with Derrick Brown. You take Isaiah Simmons, who is, just wonderfully, versatile and can do some blitzing, but he's not a guy you're going to line up as just a straight up edge rusher. Or do you just go and replace Darius Slay with Jeffrey Okuda?
Yeah, I think they'll do that. And so we're almost talking about their middle round needs or what they'll do with their other picks. They probably feel good about last year's second rounder, Jelani Tavai. He fits the part, and I think he got better as last season went along. So let's shift the focus into offense. They need a guard. They lost Graham Glasgow. They didn't replace him. And their wide receivers are both in contract years, Kenny Golladay and Marvin Jones. And those guys are young enough. Golladay's coming off his rookie deal. Jones is 30. So Jones, I don't think he's washing up or slowing down at all. It's going to be hard to sign both of them again next year. I think it might be cost prohibitive, so maybe a wide receiver.
Yeah, they pick 35 and then 67. Those are just their normal picks in this draft, and you kind of wonder, it's such a deep receiver draft. Maybe they wait until 67 to address that, and 35 is where they get their offensive lineman, where you got some really interesting guys. I mentioned Ruiz. Lloyd Cushenberry from LSU is another interesting guy who I think probably fits their scheme a little bit better. I don't know if he's a pure outside zone type of guy, whereas Ruiz is a little more scheme versatile, but they can fill some needs here. And again, you know, we pencil these things in as if it's a fantasy draft, but if there are certain guys at certain positions they like more, they might do that. But I think offensive line at 35 and then receiver at 67 probably would land them three pretty good players, along with Jeffrey Okuda, who we give them with the third pick. And that brings us to the Giants at 4.
Yeah, what will be interesting, by the way, to see if everybody's saying it's a deep receiver class. At some point, does that impact the guys at the top of the draft? I remember last year was supposedly a deep receiver class as well, and DK Metcalf fell in the draft, Debo Samuel second round, AJ Brown second round. And you wonder if it were not a deep receiver class, if, I mean, those are three pretty good talents, if mm-hmm. talents like that would have been taken earlier in the draft, because you just keep thinking, well, the receivers will be there later and later. It might not be a great year, just like it's not a good year to be a free agent wide receiver. It might not be a great year to be a first-round caliber receiver, because you might go later than you normally would have.
Yeah, not to go on too much of a tangent here, Robbie Anderson did sign with the Carolina Panthers since last time we did a show, but there was some buzz because, you know, Boomer Esiason, who does one of the local stations around here, was saying, well, the Jets offered Robbie Anderson 4 for $40, and he took 2 for $20 from the Panthers. He took a lesser deal, and it was kind of like, well, he took 2 for $20, knowing that he's going to go back onto the free agent market, probably in a year where you don't have what's considered a historically deep receiver draft. So if he can get back out in there in 2 years, that to me seems like the better deal if he has any
Absolutely.
Confidence in himself.
Well, yeah, I mean, the new TV money will probably be there in 2 years as well. So all this stuff's going to be inflated. With all due respect, it's wrong to say he took the lesser deal. The better deal, if you're assuming you're going to stay healthy, which that's a big assumption maybe, but if you're betting on yourself, the better deal is Carolina by far there.
Yeah.
Shorter contract, yeah.
Yep.
For what the Giants need, they could use a Robbie Anderson type of guy. They need a wide receiver. It's what I don't love about their receiving core is Sterling Shepard and Golden Tate are largely the same guy. You do this, and on almost every other team, they'd both be the slot guy in three receiver sets and the Z receiver mm-hmm. and two receiver sets. You move them around, you throw to them for catch and run stuff at the intermediate parts of the field. Well, those are their main receivers. Darius Slayton, I don't think, is quite there to be fully in the rotation. He did play well at times as a fifth-round rookie last year, but wide receiver's a need for this team, as is right tackle, because they lost Mike Remmers, and it was their choice to let him go. And Cam Fleming slated to start there now, and he's filled in before. He's a journeyman, backup tackle, Cowboys, Patriots. But something to help Daniel Jones, who you invested big in last year.
Yeah, you have Jerry Jeudy, who's very... We have a feature coming up on him this week. One of his college coaches described him as a jellyfish build. He's just a very flexible, really good route runner, really creates separation. And then you got CeeDee Lamb, who is a part contested catch guy, but he's not, you know, he's not just that. He's also he's a big time catch and run guy. I think the DeAndre Hopkins comparisons are pretty accurate with Lamb as far as the skill set goes. Is there anyone else? I mean, do they look at like an Isaiah Simmons? You know, obviously they could be going with a Patriots style thing with Joe Judge coming in there.
Yeah, Joe Judge is the new head coach, and Patrick Graham, who was with the Patriots a long time, he's their defensive coordinator. I am really interested to see what they do defensively, because Graham last year called the defense in Miami, and they did the Patriots stuff a lot, and that's clearly the foundation. And there were times, I've been watching Dolphins film the last few weeks, they did a lot more schematically down the stretch than people would guess. They did a lot of disguise cover two. They became very aggressive with how they blitzed out of cover two at times, which is an unusual approach that more teams are doing. So Graham might be into doing more stuff schematically than a typical Patriots guy, quote unquote, would be doing. And Graham's also, his background's in run defense mainly. And typically those guys don't become coordinators. Pass defense guys tend to become the play caller. So Graham's in an unusual spot. The other thing here that's unusual is when you look at the Giants, their defense was not good last year. But when you break down their needs, they don't have any glaring needs more so than the other. Now that they've signed James Bradbury at corner, and I think Julian Love, their fourth round rookie last year, is going to be a very good safety tandem with Jabril Peppers. Mm-hmm. That's a good secondary they have. DeAndre Baker plays better. Their defensive line is stacked. I don't quite understand the linebackers situation as much, but they just pay Blake Martinez a lot of money, so clearly they feel comfortable with them. There's no glaring hole on this defense, even though it's a defense that, without question, needs to get better across the board.
With Mike Remmers out, do they go offensive line? Because I just made up a saying, and that's that Dave Gettleman loves hog mollies.
Yeah, he can go hog molly then for offensive line. Gettleman probably does love it. Is he into defensive linemen? Is he as into offensive linemen as well? What's his? We'd have to look up his draft history. We should have thought of that. Ryan Taylor can do that.
Lots of it. I mean, when he was in Carolina, they had that thing where, I mean, what? They already had Lotulelei and Short, and they took Vernon Butler in the first round that one year.
He does that with defensive tackles. Yeah. But what I'm wondering is if he does it with
offensive tackles.
It would reason, wouldn't it? Because what if Dave Gettleman fears that there are other Dave Gettlemans out there taking all the good defensive linemen? Yep. So you need someone to block them. No, right tackles is obviously a need. So maybe they go best available between right tackle, wide receiver, and defensive line.
Do you want a guy?
Defense, not defensive line, defense. Just defense in general.
Do you want a guy, if they go offensive tackle, do you want a guy who primarily played the left side in college or the right side in college?
Well, that would depend if I think I'm re-signing Nate Solder or keeping him around. Because Solder, he has a cap number of $20.5 million in 2021. Solder has not played up to that cap number thus far, but he is you can feel good about him being on the field. He's a quality NFL left tackle for the most part. So that would be in the eye of the beholder, is do you think you're bringing Solder back or not? And maybe the decision to bring Solder back depends on who you draft. So I don't think there's a big difference between left tackle and right tackle anymore. It's just the mechanics are different. Mm-hmm. And not every guy can handle doing both mechanics, but it's not true anymore that left tackles are the dancing bears and right tackles are the hog mollies, to use your term or Dave Gettleman's term or whoever's term. That's not the case as much anymore. I think you need to protect both edges in the NFL.
I don't think I've ever said hog mollies without having Dave Gettleman's name in the same sentence.
Okay, so it's Dave Gettleman, but we don't know if Dave Gettleman says hog molly.
I feel like he must have at some point, right? Because that's all anyone ever says about him. He must have said it at some point.
I'll Google it while you tee up the next one, or pick the player. You got to pick the player.
I'll pick the player. So I really do like the idea of the Giants going CeeDee Lamb.
He did say it. He did. I'm sorry.
He did. Okay. There we go.
Because when I type Dave Gettleman hog, Google all automatically went mollies. You want mollies? And it filled it in for me. We've got a lot of Dave Gettleman hog mollies articles here. In fact,
it's I like the idea of the Giants taking CeeDee Lamb, the top receiver here, but we'll give them Jedrick Wills, the Alabama right tackle, who had he stayed at Alabama might have moved to the left side at some point, but he can probably fill right in there. Let's go Miami
Dolphins. Quarterback's in the conversation for him, of course. They're picking at a spot where, you know, they're not going to get to take any quarterback they want. They have to assume, obviously, Burrow's going to be off the board. Mm-hmm. And I would almost imagine going in, they'd have to assume, I guess, where are they picking here? They're at number, what, five in the draft?
Yeah.
I think you'd have to assume someone will have traded up and leaped past you as well.
I think so, too.
And they still have Josh Rosen on the run. I know Rosen did not play well last year, and we can have a whole podcast about whether he's had a fair shake at it or not. But they have Josh Rosen on the roster. They have a lot of need. I don't know if they're going to go quarterback the way everybody else expects that they would, is what I'm getting. And keep in mind as well, they have a ton of draft capital.
Yeah.
And if there's some way they could package or leverage that draft capital. I don't know what their, do you know what their draft capital is for 2021?
It's robust that year as well.
So they might think they can trade up and get Trevor Lawrence at some point.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. They are, of all the teams that would leap up, whether it be 2, 3, or 4, obviously they are best suited to do so. I mean, they have Houston's first rounder in 2021 and their second rounder. So,
but who are they leaping up to get? Because Burrow, from what I understand in this draft, Burrow is a class in and of himself, and then it's a few other good players potentially, but they have question marks. Tua is not a conventional style of NFL QB. And Justin Herbert is a Josh Allen type, and not everybody's going to be up for that with a first-round pick or a high first-rounder.
So Tua is, he's a little unconventional. I think he would, had he made it through last season healthy, I think you'd have a debate at the top of the draft between Burrow and Tua. I prefer Burrow, but I don't think it's crazy to prefer Tua. And beyond the hip, I mean, he battled ankle problems. It seemed like he was always banged up. I think the durability, for me, kind of bothers me with Tua.
I don't know Brian Flores. I don't know him at all. He came up in the Patriot way. My guess is he's going to want a quarterback that's more conventional, because those Patriot guys tend to believe we can out-coach you. But in order to coach well, you need to know what your players are doing. You want predictability from how your players are going to approach the game. That's why the Patriots just got Brian Hoyer. So it wouldn't surprise me if Flores doesn't want to try to reinvent the wheel at all at the quarterback position.
So I would say this. I think if you are going with like a Chan Gailey spread offense here, I think Tua is a more natural fit. I think Justin Herbert is more, at least when he enters the league, to me, he feels more like a guy who you're going to, you know, more downfield shots, probably a little more volatility as far as what you're going to get from him, especially early in his career. A lot of people thought he was sort of miscast in that Oregon, or I should say more like the Oregon offense was miscast for him. But I think he's a guy who you're probably going to, you know, sort of play action deep shot type of guy. The other question is, do you want to, you know, you mentioned the Trevor Lawrence factor, which will sort of hang over this draft as well. Do you want to bring in a young quarterback and play him behind an offensive line that is really not ready?
Yeah, it's an offensive line. To get to Miami's other team needs, offensive line would certainly headline that. The other thing that the Dolphins do not have, and really the need on the offensive line is more at tackle than guard right now. They did sign Eric Flowers. I paid him a lot of money. But they feel he'll stabilize their left guard spot. Ted Karras is a plug-in guy to hold things over at center. And then Michael Dieter, third-round pick a year ago. So they have their interior line. They need a tackle. But the other thing they really don't have at all, Gary, maybe this factors into who they take at QB at some point, their receivers are pretty one-dimensional. Now, they're decent talents. Devontae Parker's gotten better, just got a big contract. Hopefully he continues to improve now that he's been paid. Preston Williams came on very well as an undrafted rookie last year, so they found one they didn't quite expect there. They have Mac Hollins from the Eagles, who's another big guy. They have big bodied vertical type wide receivers. They don't have anybody though that can create his own space. And their running back's the same way. It's Ballage, who's a backup, and it's Jordan Howard, who's a Thunder Lightning. He'd be the Thunder guy. So they don't have any space creators at all on offense. And at some point, that's going to limit you schematically. If they're taking a QB to fit their current offense, and they probably aren't because it's not a finished product offense, but if you have one-dimensional vertical guys and the deep play action guy that you described, Herbert, that would be the best fit.
Okay.
But I don't think you do that. I think you go find some other receivers.
Yeah. I think Jerry Jeudy fits with them, and I think, again, this is a draft where I think the tackle prospects and really the offensive line prospects in general, it's not a particularly strong interior line class, but these tackle prospects, once you get outside the top four, there's a drop off, and you get risk reward guys, and some of these guys might end up being stars, but you're feeling less good about them, and it seems like those top four guys are going to come off in the top you know, if, you know, maybe not even first, or excuse me, top half of the first round, but maybe even top 10 here. So I kind of want to give them one of the tackles just for fun. I do gut feeling is they still take one of the quarterbacks, but I kind of want to give him like Mekhi Becton here, the left tackle from Louisville, who's really a massive guy. And I mean, you know, you think back to the guys the Patriots had over the years, you know, whether it be Marcus Cannon or Trent Brown, a guy who's had success there. And Becton certainly has that size. I think he's even more nimble than those other guys. And I like the thought of basically getting this offensive line right and then getting the quarterback.
I wouldn't be shocked if I agree with you. I wouldn't be shocked if they go that way. What they showed last year in their rebuilding effort, not a tanking effort, what they showed in their rebuilding effort last year, they're willing to be patient. And the way they've been trading and getting future draft capital, they understand it's a multi-year process. Why wouldn't you get the insurance for the QB if you truly believe you can get the QB you want next year? Which I think they should believe that, because in theory, they could trade up to get Lawrence. They're going to have enough capital to be able to do that.
Yeah. I wouldn't guarantee that. I do think Lawrence is a sort of generational guy, potentially.
Yeah. Yeah,
at this moment. Right. So if you have the topic, I think it's going to be tough to pry away. But
someone would have to agree to trade with you. That's
true. I don't like the thought of plugging, especially a guy with Tua's injury history behind this offensive line, or a guy like Justin Herbert, who probably needs a little more polish, and to throw him in, you know, when he's getting drilled constantly is just not a great setup. So let's have some fun giving the offensive linemen. So first five picks, we have Burrow to Cincinnati, Chase Young to Washington, Okuda to Detroit, Jedrick Wills to the Giants, and now Mekhi Becton to Miami. And that brings us to the Chargers at six.
What I don't know with the Chargers right now is if they're building for now, or if they're looking ahead a little bit and looking to next year. Obviously, they are a competitive team. I know they were 5-11 last year, but the difference between these 5-11 Chargers and the Chargers that went 12-4 the year before, it's not a – I mean, it's obviously the 12-4 team's better, but it's not a gargantuan difference mm-hmm. the way the record suggests. So the Chargers could reasonably think we're contenders now. We obviously need to find a QB. That's a big deal, but – Tyrod Taylor, if we've said before, if any coach would like Tyrod Taylor as their starter, I think it would be Anthony Lynn, because Lynn is such a good run game mind, and he understands what a mobile QB could do for your running game. So the Chargers have signed Chris Harris at cornerback. He's in his 30s, young 30s. They signed Linval Joseph at nose tackle, also in his 30s, 32 in October. And they signed Brian Bulaga at right tackle, 31, and he honestly feels older than that because he's been around and he's had injuries throughout his career. Those are their big free agent signings this year. Those are the signings of a team ready to win and play right now. But that team does not have a QB on the roster unless they truly feel Taylor's the guy. And next year's list of free agents is unbelievable, Gary. The guys that they have to re-sign, It's their team. It's Joey Bosa's a free agent. Melvin Ingram, a defensive end. Cornerback Desmond King, who was all pro a couple years ago. Number one receiver, Keenan Allen. Number two receiver, Mike Williams. His fifth-year option's not picked up yet. Number one tight end, Hunter Henry. Top lineman, Mike Pouncey at center. Those are their free agents next year. They're not going to be able to keep all those guys. It's just the economics of that is not likely. So I don't know if they're drafting for now or for next year, because they're signing free agents for now, but they need to draft guys for next year because they're not going to be able to have all their guys back.
Yeah, and I mean, Williams was a high, you know, he was 7th overall pick, so that's an expensive 5th-year option if they pick it up. That's not a slam dunk. I'm with you. To me, this feels more like a team that's building to win right now. We can debate the wisdom of that with the Chiefs in their division, but certainly they can bounce back and get double-digit wins. Let me just ask you real quick before we peg a prospect to them. Cam Newton's out there, and obviously there are so many question marks with Cam Newton's health. If you thought Cam Newton could be, let's say, you know, whatever, 80% healthy of what he was a couple years ago, does he make more sense? Does it make more sense to sign Cam Newton and then, you know, get, whatever, fill out your offensive line with one of these tackles and go that route?
Yeah, in my opinion, yes, it does. I would take a Cam Newton question mark over a sure thing Tyrod Taylor right now. That's what I would do. I think Newton gives you much more in the passing game if things go well there. And the other part that we have to acknowledge, and I don't want to be disrespectful to anybody because I know I'm positive Tom Telesco, their GM, when he goes to the office, his focus is completely on how do I make this team better? Who do I want to bring in? The reality is they're trying to win the LA market as well. And they're in a tough spot there, and they have the new stadium opening up and they need to fill that thing. And a big name QB would go a long ways for that. So if you could get the best of all worlds and find a QB who fits, they were in the Tom Brady sweepstakes, which obviously would be an effort to try to win now. It didn't work out for them. The biggest QB in the draft marketing wise would be Tua. You probably don't want to draft a QB for his hype and marketing. That's just you're playing with fire there. That's a big risk. Newton would kind of be the best of all worlds there, though. I think people in LA would show up to see Cam Newton play.
I agree. Yeah, I do hope Cam lands there.
It would make sense. They could really, and he's the style of QB that they could best use, especially because a lot of their routes, their best two players downfield, are Keenan Allen. And Allen can do anything, but Mike Williams, he's a downfield guy. He's not a quick throw type of guy. You're not going to throw him an option route like Edelman would catch or something. So who's a good intermediate thrower? That's Newton, because Newton's been better throwing downfield intermediate. He didn't throw deep very much last time we saw him, but yeah. he fits Mike Williams' style of play is the point I'm getting at.
Yeah. I should mention, just a quick aside on the new stadium, our Jason Hirschhorn over at Charger Report had the breaking news on Saturday that one of the workers on the stadium, they had let them continue to work on the stadium while the rest of California was basically shutting down, and one of the workers tested positive for COVID-19. So no one's exactly sure what's going to happen with this stadium there, or do they have to go back to the soccer stadium, or we're getting ahead of ourselves, but just something to think about. And our guy Jason Hirschhorn is on top of it there. I like the idea of them taking one of the offensive linemen.
Okay.
And linemen, then huh? Yeah. What would you do if they were not going quarterback? What would you do?
I would probably take the best defensive player available.
Interesting. Okay.
I mean, you could go lineman as well. They need a tackle. Brian Bulaga is going to play on the right side, so they need a left tackle. You know what? They had Trey Pipkins. I forgot Trey Pipkins was there last year, their third round pick. He wasn't great when he was on the field, but he's a rookie left tackle. He's not a finished product. You can't just turn your back on him yet.
All right. You want to give him the Swiss Army knife, Isaiah Simmons?
Yes, I do. I'd love to see him in a different scheme, because this is a cover three execution based scheme more than a trick you, out scheme you, come after you type of approach. And guys like Simmons, I love to see in those defense, like a Ravens or something like that. But Simmons paired with Derwin James, that might leave the Chargers with no choice but to just change the scheme, because those guys are going to give them so much more dimension.
Let's do that. Let's give them Isaiah Simmons to the Chargers. Let's leave those quarterbacks on the board for the time being and move to Carolina.
Carolina Panthers, everything. I mean, anything and everything's in play. They're in a big rebuilding effort. Bridgewater's the guy at quarterback for right now, and I'm fine with that. So let's go to a different need. They did sign Robbie Anderson as well. That helps their receiving core. Interior offensive line would be something on the list. Tight end is certainly on that list with Greg Olsen gone. Those two things, by the way, go hand in hand, because from what we hear about Matt Rhule, he wants to be an old school established run game kind of coach. So he didn't necessarily coach that way at Baylor, but the different, totally different league and player pool that you're working with there. If Rhule wants to be a traditional established run offense, and he hires Joe Brady, who comes from the Saints, and the Saints, we think of them as this wide open, high flying offense, but they're a very traditional, balanced offense as well, then they need a tight end and an offensive lineman, especially inside at guard or center, because that's really where your schematic diversity comes from.
Well, the tight end class is not strong. I don't know if any of these guys will break into the first round. Although, look, George Kittle was a fifth round pick and Travis Kelce was a third round pick. So what does that mean in the end? But an interesting guy to me is Tristan Wirfs from Iowa. It's such an insult to say a guy would be better kicking inside. He played right tackle at Iowa. Again, I mean, we talk about the fact that left tackle, right tackle is not the same split it kind of used to be. Wirfs was their most athletic lineman. They just played him on the right side. A lot of people think he would be absolutely dominant as a guard. So maybe you take him and you kind of figure out what you want to do with him once you get him in the building. But it seems like you can't really go wrong with a guy like that.
And I have no problem with a team moving. There was another guy that came out of Iowa once that had that happy move from tackle to guard. It was Brandon Scherff for Washington. They moved him to guard pretty much on day one, and he never left the position. And he's turned into a perennial Pro Bowl caliber blocker for him. So I'm fine. At the end of the day, you need five offensive linemen. And if you have a weak spot, you're in trouble, because that's where all the blitzes and pass rush designer tactics are going to attack. So you need a high floor or a lack of weaknesses at O-line. And no team's ever had a problem with having – you never hear a team say, oh, shoot, our best player is a guard. I wish he were a tackle. They don't say you have your best player and you build around him accordingly. So if that's going to be a guy at guard, that's just fine. Ask the Colts how bad it is to have your best lineman be a guard.
Yeah. Yeah. Tristan Wirfs to the Panthers. I like that. And that brings us to Arizona with the 8th pick.
Well, you just said there's no tight end, so it's – with the 8th pick, they need a tight end, but let's call that a mid-round addition for them then. Defensively, it was the worst defense in the league last year on paper, and it was a pretty inconsistent defense on film. The fastest way, there's two ways to quickly improve the makeup of your defense. You find a number one lockdown corner, or you find a big-time pass rusher. And the way this defense is set up and the way Vance Joseph, their defensive coordinator, calls games, I think the big-time pass rusher would get them to where they want to be quicker. So I would go with the best pass rusher available. But if there's a versatile corner or a corner they love, doesn't have to be versatile, a big man-to-man corner, even a dynamic safety if they wanted to pair someone with Buda Baker, you know, they could go that route as well. But I think you pass rusher if all things are equal.
What if it was an interior guy?
Interesting question, because they signed Jordan Phillips already in free agency. So that's one spot down. Corey Peters is their other defensive tackle. He is consistently one of those guys who's better than you think every time. You always forget about him, and then you put on the film, and it's Corey Peters making all the plays. So if I were them, I'd feel good about my defensive tackles. Now, Peters is not a true three technique on passing downs. And if you draft someone in the first round, you're drafting him to play your passing downs. So they could, if there's an interior guy, if they think Aaron Donald's on the board there, go ahead and do that. But that, to me, that interior guy would have to really stand head and shoulders above of the edge guy.
Off the edge, you got Kalavon Chasen from LSU, who is a little bit raw, but incredibly fast. Just pure speed off the edge. He's probably below Derrick Brown, the Auburn, who's probably best as like a nose shade, the Auburn defensive tackle. And other than that, I mean, C.J. Henderson at corner, certainly... big drop off after Okuda. And then you're looking at, like Xavier McKinney at safety. There are a lot of really interesting sort of versatile Swiss Army knife type guys at safety who can, play the slot, play in the box, maybe in a stretch play a little center field. McKinney probably falls into that. I know a lot of people think he's probably more of a mid to late first rounder, but I guess that's a question. Do you go with the sort of raw speed edge guy, or do you go with the versatile safety who's probably, I don't know, if we're doing shorthand, probably a higher floor but a lower ceiling?
Yeah, that's hard to say, because Buda Baker's that guy for them now. Baker is almost, he's a Tyrann Mathieu type. It's not just because they're both small and quick. I mean, he can do a lot of things as well. One thing I did overlook initially, Gary, is Patrick Peterson's in the final year of his contract, and I've heard they want to keep him. I don't know how they feel about him right now. I didn't think Peterson was as good last year as he's been in other seasons. So he's 29 years old. He's in a contract year. Costs a lot of money if you're going to re-sign him. You need a number two cornerback anyway. So I said, all things being equal, you take the pass rusher. Well, that might, I might have to rethink that and say you take the best available between corner and pass rusher then. And if there's a, but you described the versatile safety, head and shoulders, if there's one that's head and shoulders above all those other guys, yeah, it doesn't hurt you to have two versatile safeties. That was a big deal for the Chiefs last year when they got better down the stretch, because it was Kendall Fuller playing safety with Matthew.
Let's kind of for the sake of the draft board, let's give him the edge rusher. You okay with that?
Yeah.
It's actually the Cardinals, and especially now that we've discussed it, the Cardinals are definitely prime candidates to trade down. They traded their second rounder, just threw it away to get DeAndre Hopkins. So they, you know, maybe they recoup something if they move down in round one here. Because even looking at this board, I don't know. I mean, obviously, if Okuda falls to them, then they're pretty excited. But other than that, I don't know if there's anyone that they would absolutely be ecstatic to get.
Okay, that's fine. And they didn't. I don't know much about him because he was not on the field a whole lot last year. But they drafted Zach Allen in the third round a year ago. And he came from Boston College. I don't think he's an edge guy. In my mind's eye, he didn't play off the edge. But you know, that's
yeah. Yeah. No, he's not an edge guy. At least he wasn't a BC. I don't know if they're trying to develop different. But
well, I was thinking about maybe your three technique question or your defensive tackle question. I'd have to go back and look at my Cardinal notes to see if Zach Allen factors into that. But you have to look at last year's draft anyway. You have to keep that in consideration to some degree, because if these teams are smart, none of them are drafting guys thinking they're going to be instant fixes.
Yeah. No, that's very true. Well, Andy, that does it for part one of the mock draft series here. Just a really quick recap. Burrow to Cincinnati, Chase Young to Washington, Okuda to Detroit, Jedrick Wills to the Giants, Becton to Miami, Isaiah Simmons to the Chargers, Wirfs to Carolina, Chasen to Arizona. So some quarterbacks left on the board for part two. Maybe things get interesting there. But Andy, I once again thank you for joining us as our special guest this week.
Yes, sir.
The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is me, Gary Gramling. Special thanks to Andy Benoit for joining me this week. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL Podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.